can't emphasize enough that the texts of the Bible are not history, they're theology. And we find this pattern over and over again in the writings of Luke, both in the book of Acts and in the Gospel. That Luke probably forestalled the horror and the shame and the shock of Jesus being murdered politically. He wanted to domesticate, to tame that awful fact by saying, well, this was inevitable. This was written in the prophets. This was written, blah, 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 blah. It wasn't, folks. It wasn't. None of the prophets talked about a suffering Messiah. In fact, quite the opposite. The Messiah was supposed to be a triumphant figure, a regal figure. As long as we know what's going on, we're all right. Okay, I've been saying that the text regarding the resurrection narratives and here today, the ascension narratives, are impossible to coordinate, either temporally or geographically. I mean, Jesus up north, Jesus down south. And today we have probably the most notable discrepancy. We have Luke having Jesus hang around for 40 days. Well, it's very clear in the Gospel of John that the ascension is simply an extension of the resurrection. And again, we have to kind of excise these images of our head, that great Raphael painting of Jesus being airborne, you know, floating up in his red dress. And it didn't happen that way, folks. We're talking about faith. Faith is the substance of things unseen. But we want to concretize, we want to literalize this for our own benefit, I think. So this raises the stakes, so to speak. So the ascension is clearly the prolongation of the resurrection. And again, to reprise what I tried to say on Easter Sunday, what is the resurrection? God rewarding Jesus for good behavior? Or Jesus, you know, being up in the air and then he has his little sojourn and has a few troubles and then gets airborne again and goes back home? No, come on, that's too ridiculous to be believed. So what does it mean when we say that God has raised Jesus from the dead? God is just doing what the Jewish understanding of God always was, namely, God is steadfastly loving. And so God responds to the steadfast love of this man, Jesus, by bringing Jesus to God's self. That's what's going on. But again, as we tend to make another historical gap by separating, I think, the resurrection from the crucifixion. There is no resurrection without the crucifixion, and the texts insist again and again that the risen Jesus, whatever those appearances were, whatever form they took, always has Jesus with holes. It's the crucified Jesus that God raised. Why? Because crucifixion is precisely the price of human integrity. Try it. So, if God is raising this man Jesus, what does this say to us about reality? The truth is stronger than the lie. That justice is stronger than injustice. That nonviolent resistance is stronger than all oppression. In other words, all of this counterfactual statements, all of these statements about who God is and what we are called to be as human beings. And I think the older I get, the more I'm convinced that the title of a book by M. Scott Peck, who used to be very popular in certain circles, is really very much to the point. He talked about us human beings as the people of the lie. The longer I live, the more I'm aware of the tendency to dishonesty in myself, to tailor the truth, to manage the truth, not to have the truth making a demand on me, but me using the truth to my own advantages. And I see this resonating every place in the world. In the university, just because we can give bigger words to the lie doesn't mean they're not lies. It's the appetites, the self-seeking, the self-aggrandizement that we see over and over again. The distortion of the truth, the management of the truth is certainly there. The Archbishop of Newark is now being called upon by his own people to resign because he's been assiduously hiding a notorious pedophile in his diocese for some time. And this is, of course, one of an endless series of bishops who've done exactly the same thing, without another bishop raising their eyes or their hackles or their eyebrows or their voices. Say, this is a lie. The world of advertising. I used to teach a course in media at King's. And the sociologists say we see 3,000 ads a day. I mean, you can't watch a bus from the LTC go down the street without being bombarded with spy tech or new girls or something. It's the only industry that I can think that is founded, has its, one of its founding principles, on dishonesty, basically, on misrepresentation. The point being, how can we live in this world where we're immersed in such dishonesty? From the church, from the university, from the politics, political world. Every place. And you don't have to be some kind of sour, cynical human being. It seems to me you just have to be clear-sighted. To look and say, what is really true here? What is really true here? And that's why the resurrection and the costliness of Jesus' life becomes so clear. Jesus never lied. At whatever cost, Jesus told the truth. Jesus was the truth, as the Gospel of John will have. In a way that was nonviolent, because we all are familiar with the tactic of using the truth as a hammer with which to attack, assault, beat up other people. That's not truth-telling. That's simply another manipulation of the truth to our own ends. To imagine, therefore, because that's what it calls for, to imagine that the truth will have the last word. That justice will have the last word. That nonviolence, non-oppressive relationships will have the last word. But I think this business of the lie is pivotal to all this, because there's no greater injustice that we can perpetrate than to lie to ourselves or to each other. There's no greater oppression than to lie. And of course, this illuminates in wonderful clarity what love is about. You can't have love if you don't have truth. You can't have love if you don't have truth. Only if I truly say to myself and to the other who I am, is real love possible? Where are all the ersatz, surrogate forms of love? Either romantic illusion or self-delusion or the multiple ways in which we can kind of infantilize ourselves to persuade us that real love is going on when we know it's not or suspect it's not. But the lie, that's why I think that the doctrine of the resurrection and the ascension is so important, because it highlights the primacy and the ultimate triumph of the truth. About ourselves, about the world. And that's why this is a great feast of hope, I think. Because it is we live, I think, as Carl Ronner said, in a wintry season for faith, it's very hard to find a handhold, I think, for our lives in a world that is so slippery, so marinated in dishonesty. A little footnote that several years ago, Princeton University Press published a series of essays by a philosopher on their faculty, a guy named Harry Frankfurt. Interestingly enough, they excised one of those multiple essays in a little tiny, elegantly printed book. If you'll allow the language, this is the title of the book. I'm not making this on bullshit. It's a marvelous little essay. What is bullshit? The lie. Telling people what we know is not true. I recommend it to you all, still in print, still in this nice little elegant pocket-sized edition. We should be encouraged by our belief, and it's only belief, the factual evidence for this is meager at best, that bullshit will not have the last word, that God is stronger than even our lies.